from the campus of Gonzaga University in Spokane, Washington, you're listening to the G Suite Podcast, where we discuss all things Zag business.
Timo Korakarmäki is the Dean of the School of Business at Aalto University in Helsinki, Finland, the country's top business school. A Gonzaga MBA graduate and former professor of finance in Jepson, he discusses everything from Tex-Mex to differences in educational structures across the pond.
So you're joining us from Helsinki. Now it's about 5:30 in the afternoon there. Is it dark out? Are you guys getting some longer spring days?
No. We're getting to the longer side of the spring now. So we're getting ready for midsummer when the sun never sets. So
that's perfect. That's the good time of year. So, well, fantastic. Well, thanks for joining us. You may not realize, but I wouldn't say brief time, but your time here still has an impact. People still talk about Timo and all the positive things, and I appreciate you joining the pod. Let's start at the beginning. Where now you're growing up in Finland, right? And then are you originally from Helsinki?
I'm actually from the West Coast. The nearest city of any size is called Vaasa. That's where my parents still live. So.
Oh, fantastic. Now, is it a kind of a beach town in the summer?
There is a beach, but I wouldn't describe it quite as a beach town. But yes, it's a, nice thing about being in Finland, I get to visit it a little bit more often than back when I lived in Spokane. So.
I can only imagine. Yeah, I can only imagine. So you grew up and you did undergrad in Finland.
Actually, let me correct you there. I did my undergraduate in Sweden. So, being on the West Coast, it was a 4-hour ferry ride to the city on the Swedish side. And that's where I actually traveled to do my undergraduate.
Interesting. I didn't know that. So pardon my ignorance here, but I'm guessing, that institution's in Swedish, you're speaking Swedish and Finnish, in English, obviously, in the other languages, Russian in there, you got Estonian or anything like that, or?
Well, there's only a little over 5 million Finnish speakers in the world. So, we do study languages in school. Swedish is the second official language of Finland. So it's mandatory for, us to take Swedish in school. English is usually the first one. So I also started English on third grade. Swedish came on a seventh grade. And then I took few years of German, but it's been many years since I spoke any, so I think I could still read some German, but that's it.
I'm always jealous of Europeans and their language ability. And speaking of Europe, I'm teaching in Florence next spring, so I'm pretty excited about that. Bring in my 5-year-old.
That'd be nice and good to know. Maybe you need to swing by Finland on that trip.
Absolutely. And I think you probably cross paths here with Marietta Bicciri for some point. She's got her place in Albania. She wants me to visit. So I'm going to have to get my frequent flyer miles out and make some trips happen for sure. But we're excited. I want to put my youngest one in the school that speaks Italian so he can get some exposure to.
Well, that'll be fun. I spent a semester there when I was at GU, so you will have fun.
Fantastic. Well, good. Now I have another since we're speaking of languages, I remember now I was in your class. That might have been it was Principles of Finance. I'm gonna guess 2001, 2002, somewhere around that time. And you told a great
2001
story.
Is when I started at GU. So, it can't be earlier than that.
Yeah, it must have been the fall of 2001, because I remember it was your first semester. I remember you saying, hey, it's the first time here. Uh-huh. You told a story of you were doing a research project. Now, maybe this was in grad school. And I think you called like the finance minister of Latvia or Estonia or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they spoke Finnish because they watched Finnish TV. Can you expound on that? I forget the details.
Yeah. No, it was actually Estonia. This was the I spoke to. He was the basically the number one guy at the Central Bank of Estonia, and you know, if I'm now in Helsinki, so Tallinn, the capital of Estonia, is. How far is it? Probably 45-50 kilometers from us on the other side of the Bay of Finland. And indeed, during the Soviet times, they watched Finnish TV. And the Estonian is the language that is closest to Finnish. And it's not quite, but you know, it's close enough that I understand some of it just by listening. Of course, then, you know, when they watched, I mean, Dallas was a very popular series also in Tallinn at that point of time. they watched Finnish TV, which made it even more fluent. I mean, made them even more fluent in Finnish, especially on the kind of northern coast of Estonia, which is closer to us.
Fantastic. That's yeah. That was a great story. So anyway, I digress, and it's early over here in the morning, so I'm a little still kind of waking up. I've only had my two cups of coffee. I'm usually need to get about four or five before I'm rocking. So undergrad in Sweden, and then at some point you get the bug to come to the US. Or now, did you work in between, or how did that work out?
Well, there is actually a semi-long story involved. So I was doing track and field pretty seriously when I was young, and so I ended up spending 1 year as an exchange student in the US while I was still studying in Sweden. And that year I actually spent at Brigham Young on their track and field team. So that was my very first exposure to the US. Significant in that way that I met my current wife on that trip too. She's also from Finland, but you know, we met and then I came back to finish my school in Sweden. Then we went back to finish her school in Provo, Utah. And that trip was planned to be 6 months, and it ended up being 16 years. And it included, you know, so I don't know if you remember or know, but I got my MBA from Gonzaga. That was my first exposure to the GU. We were living in Spokane, Washington, and I wanted to educate myself a little further, so I enrolled in the MBA. And that was actually one of the big kind of, how should I say, big milestones in my life, in that, you know, it kind of, I looked at the GU professors' lifestyles and I thought that, you know, that looks pretty cool. And you can probably relate, huh? And then I started looking into PhD programs. Another thing, I was at that point, there was at least two faculty members who had gotten their PhDs from University of South Carolina. So they were talking to me about South Carolina, and then I started looking more into it. And that's, you know, long story short, that's where I ended up doing my doctorate then. And I
knew that. So you moved up to Spokane for work after your wife graduated BYU.
Yeah, we had some distant relatives, or I have some distant relatives at that point who lived in Spokane. So it was kind of, a lot of coincidences. One of the big factors for us kind of wanting to stay in the US was that Finland had a very deep depression back in the early 90s. Okay. We had a big banking crisis, and there was huge unemployment figures in Finland at that point of time. If we wanted to do it the easy way, we would have moved back and, you know, filed for unemployment. But we thought that, you know, that was kind of not in the nature of me and my wife. So we stayed, and we lived in Spokane, I think, about 6 years. including, you know, my MBA stint. By the way, I'm the first ever Finnish citizen GU student. And my wife is the second ever. I don't know if how many there's been since then, but she also got her MBA from GU.
I love it. I love it. Oh, that's fantastic. So you get your MBA, you're like, and I agree on the lifestyle, and the way our culture's set up and the interaction with students. And I say this a lot, but just by virtue of my title, I'm able to call an employer and introduce a student to an employer and, you know, hopefully make a difference. And it's just so rewarding in so many ways. Okay. So now you're poking around, you're looking at Columbia, South Carolina. Now, when I think of the climate there, that's a little different than Spokane and a little different than anywhere in Finland, I imagine. So,
through that, I mean, yeah, of course, you got your doctorate too. So, you know that when you're a doctorate student, it doesn't matter how the weather is like outside. So, yeah, it was, you know, it was not the climate that I would enjoy as a professional, but you know, as a doctor student, you're pretty much inside during working hours, including evenings. So then it doesn't matter that much.
Well, that's fantastic. And I don't know if you know John Hackney.
Yes.
He may have had him as a student. I think he was an econ major here.
Not quite, but I've met him actually. You know, I visited Columbia, South Carolina a couple of times, and I think I met him at some finance conference too. So yes.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. I think he's enjoying it out there. He's been out there probably 4 or 5 years on the finance track. So another ZEG USC connection. Okay, and so then you go to market. Now, yep. It's pretty hard to pick and choose. I mean, timing's everything. Yeah. How do you end up back in Spokane?
Well, another kind of incident of coincidences. I mean, I was in my fourth year. Typical is 5 years in PhD studies, but I knew that GU had an opening coming, and of course, you know, the finance profs were all my friends. I knew them from my MBA studies, so you know, I talked to them also sometimes about academics, then I decided to go on the market after 4 years, and I did have a bunch of interviews, but one of them was with Gonzaga, and of course, you know, for me it was very much like, you know, moving back home back then. So you know, once everything clicked, there was no question in my mind.
Yeah, that's so cool. That's so cool. Yeah. And you came back in 2001, and then you had to deal with me as a student. So you survived that. You can survive anything, right? So
that's, yeah. Well, there were some students even harder than you, but
I remember you had, now this was in the early days of websites, and I think for your class website, you had a picture of I think it was your first son, and I believe his name was Tomas.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was crying, and you said, "Here's Tomas displaying March sadness," right? And that was the time when the Zags were exploding on the March Madness scene. So I imagine he's an adult now, probably out going to grad school himself or beyond. Well, so yeah.
He's 23, so times have gone.
for sure. What was your event in track and field?
Throwing events. Shot put was my best event. I threw some discus too, but
okay, fantastic. Okay, so now you're at GU, and you were here, what would you say, was it about 7-8 years, decade?
I moved to Finland 2008, so okay. No, was it 7 or 8 years, something like that? I'm not good with numbers, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, nor am I. And then so you move back, and you're currently at, and I'm going to probably butcher the name, Aalto?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But that wasn't your first stop. You went to, I think, Henken first, right?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I was at Hanken for 11 years actually, and there my first, I'd say about 7 years, I was just a regular professor doing what professors do, focusing on my own research, doing my teaching, and and then the dean, or it's actually the president, because this is a business standalone business school. So she asked me if I'd be interested in vice dean position, and I had no idea what that means. And I had always sworn that I would never get into university administration. So it took some thinking, but then I thought that, once you work in university as long as you do, it might be kind of neat to know how these things work. So after some, pondering, I ended up, accepting that position. So I was the dean of research there then for I think about 4 years. Then after 4 years, I wanted badly to go back to teaching and research. So I said that, okay, this is it for administration. And I had a half year sabbatical, which I spent at the central bank here in Helsinki. And then I kind of made a deal because they needed a department chair for finance. So I said, okay, I can be department chair if I get to have a sabbatical first. And then pretty soon after I had taken that job, they called me from Aalto, and they said that, they're looking for a dean, and they would really like me to apply. And there was another period of some deep thoughts, and I thought, Aalto is the clear number one business school in Finland, and I thought that, this is a stone that I have to turn. I wouldn't, there are some things that you're gonna feel, bad if you afterwards, like, why didn't I, try that? So yes, that's how I became the dean, and it's been now a little over 4 years.
Wow, that's so awesome. And I know, and maybe you taught this class at Honken, is what you say. Honken is better. Dan Law teaches a class. Does he still teach a class over at Honken? Maybe it's a summer or quick compressed class in cost accounting. Does that
He's
sound
been
right?
doing an MBA class there, yes.
Okay. Yeah. And I think he mentioned once that, like, hey, we need someone to do this. This would be great. So what now, you've been an administrator in two different institutions in Finland, and what are some of the bigger differences, if any, in higher ed between the two countries, the US and Finland?
Actually, there are quite a few differences. The Finnish universities, they're very, very research oriented, to the point where, our students, when they do their bachelor, they write a bachelor's thesis, and there's an expectation that the thesis has an academic contribution. They're pretty heavy theses. And for instance, finance students writing their bachelor thesis, they would do pretty serious econometrics. They would, collect data, and they have research skills that are quite, remarkable. Actually, that was one of my first culture shocks. I was supervising some of those bachelor theses my first year back, and they were talking about econometrics that were at the level where I was really impressed. So there's a heavy focus on doing your own independent research already at the bachelor level. At
Interesting.
the master level, it gets even more serious than that. I've actually published two or three research articles in peer-reviewed journals, which have originally been master's theses. So then I've continued on those with my students, and so it's actually quite rewarding for a professor to
Yeah.
see, because especially when they start their bachelor's thesis, you know, this is their first ever independent research adventure. So you always see a big growth story during that semester. And when you see the finished results, you're always impressed. So then, you know, as a researcher, I mean, you know, accounting and finance are the same, so we're quite data driven. And you sometimes, as a researcher, you get these ideas like, well, I wonder if that would work. So this was a perfect testing ground for that too. So if you have an advisee coming out, what should I do my master's thesis on? So you toss the ideas, they do it, and then you find out whether it's an idea worth pursuing further. So it was nice in that way.
Interesting. Now, do the students pay for college, or is it state funded?
Oh, good question. So in Finland, the university degrees are free of charge by law for domestic students. Now, domestic means not only Finland, but the entire EU. So if you're from Germany, France, you can come to Finland free of charge to get your bachelor, master degrees. We do have, and this is only last about 6-7 years, I think. So we do charge tuition for students who come from outside EU area. Even there, we're not quite on the American scale, but you know, the bottom line is that our main funding source is the Ministry of Education and Culture of Finland, and it's quite different ballgame.
Yeah, I did in grad school. It was an exchange program. It was in the summer with the University of Montpellier in France. And I don't know how they worked it out, but I remember when the French students came back to Gainesville, Florida, there was some sticker shock at what tuition is. It's like, oh. Yeah. So the classes are in Finnish, maybe. Is there some Swedish classes, some English classes? I mean, obviously, Dan Law's teaching in either Dutch or English.
Well, we actually have a little bit of a current issue on that because our main bachelor program is officially in Finnish, but there is a lot of teaching in English within the program too. And we're getting some critique for getting too English. And it's a difficult issue because we want to be an international business school, and about a quarter of our faculty, a little bit more than that now, is non-Finnish speakers. We recruit globally on the international academic market, and that's what we want to do. At the same time, if you're the leading business school of the country, it kind of falls on you to make sure, for instance, that there's a vocabulary in finance in Finnish, which is right on the edge now. I'm born and raised Finn, but I don't know if I could actually teach a class in Finnish. I've never done it.
that's interesting. I was speaking with, we have a couple professors in engineering who are Italian, he was going back to Genoa to teach an engineering class, and he was like, I've never, this is a different, the technical language is different than, you know, when I spoke with my parents growing up. So, wow, that's fascinating.
It's also, if you look at where our students are placed, we have the big fours in Finland too. And, 95% of the work they do will be in English. So, right. You know, it would be difficult to, you know, in many ways to limit yourself to just teaching in Finnish, but it's not a simple issue. There's a lot of different takes on that.
Yeah, I get the friction there, right? Because you want to preserve your unique culture and language, but English is currently the international language of business. So, and now you mentioned the big fours over there. They're now in the US, they're largely accounting. Over there, typically they're broader. They might even involve the practice of law or other areas. Yeah. Is that kind of your experience? Yeah.
Yeah, they are in accounting, but also very much in, corporate finance consulting type of activity. So, yes.
And I imagine those are good jobs to get in
Yeah,
Finland.
and they hire a lot. I mean, well, accounting arts in particular, they are growing. I thought that once that, accounting, the traditional auditing would be kind of a, sunset field, but I've been proven wrong because they are hiring, any of our students before they even get to graduate.
That was the big fear. 5, 10 years, everything will be automated. We have blockchain and data analytics to where we don't even need to sample anymore. We have the computer power to audit everything, and we just need one or two auditors, and the 98 others out of 100 can go find something else. But it certainly hasn't happened in the US. It's gotten more complex, regulated. And what we're facing, and I don't know if this is a situation with finance and accounting in your neck of the woods, but a shortage of accountants now. Not so much in finance. It kind of seems like when the economy gets better, more people move into finance because there's some of those consulting gigs where it's a little sexier than being an accountant, I think. And then when things tighten up, people go back to the secure accounting. But is that similar experience there? Or?
No, I think in general, I don't think I was alone in thinking that auditing would be a field, sunset field. I think our students thought that too. So, and there was, I wouldn't call it the dip, but there was a little bit of a reduction in, demand for accounting programs. But now they are, very much, they've been on the way back for a few years. And I think it's just that there's a huge demand. For and I mean it's things like sustainability accounting and all that, it is just drawing a lot of people.
Right.
Right.
We're actually offering courses in that area right now and expanding the credits because that's what the employers are asking for. So now is the undergrad degree, is it 3 years or 4 years in Finland? I know it can vary around the world.
It's 3 years. Master's is another two on top of that. And Finland is a little bit different from even many European countries, that for us, the tradition is that, you get admitted to the Bachelor of Science program. And with that admission, you gain an automatic study right to continue straight to the Master of Science.
Okay.
And most of our students do that. Not that they love the study, I think they do, but the job market basically requires that. So there's very little job market in Finland for bachelors. So many of them, they do their bachelor thesis and they go straight into the master's. One of our challenges is that our students, compared to the US students, they are very, very independent. Most of them work on the side. Many of them, when especially when they're working on master's thesis on their last, stretch, they might work full time, and it stretches their studies. They tend to graduate not exactly in 5 years with bachelor or master. It might go into 6 or 7 years.
Interesting. And I'm actually thinking I have an advisee from Sweden. He's a tennis player. And he's no he spoke to some of this. Is it tip now in England, they'll take a gap year, and I don't know how common that is in continental Europe or elsewhere. Are these 18-year-olds coming up, or are they taking some time after their secondary education?
Some do, yes. And it's also, I mean, being that the university education is free of charge, there's a line for it, so to speak.
Okay.
So we have, we have a couple different ways in which we take students into our bachelor program. By the way, our bachelor program is the most popular, there's most competition. I mean, we have about 3,500 applicants for 400 slots. And therefore, not everybody gets to continue their studies straight out of high school. Some of them have a gap year when they work. Then, of course, in Finland, we also have mandatory military service for male. Personally, I had three gap years between high school and college. One of them was military, then there was some work, etc., etc. So,
yeah, and speaking of military, welcome to NATO, by the way. Yeah, that's a
yes. Well, thank you. Thank
better
you,
or worse, I guess. Right?
Yeah. Yes.
Interesting. Okay, so they could, okay, and then they come in 3 years. Okay, and you said about 400 per class. Okay, and most are getting their math. That's interesting. It's fascinating. Before I came back to Gonzaga, I worked in international tax at Deloitte. And one of the things I loved about it was I got to speak with professionals in Luxembourg or Korea or Brazil. And, you know, I would have been the U.S. tax expert. They're the expert in their country's taxes. And we would, on some level, educate each other because we were doing a transaction that would be affected by both sides. And I always found it fascinating how cultural values and norms would even creep up through the tax code and be reflected in how a society raises revenue to pay for things. So this is kind of in a similar vein, learning how Finns educate and how they kind of proceed. So that's fascinating.
Yeah, and that free college education is almost like a sacred cow in Finland. So, you know, we, by that law, we cannot charge for anything. There can't be even application fee anything that even smells a little bit like a cost on education. There's a big uproar in the society, and the student unions in particular, they get very upset if anybody even thinks about that.
Wait, what's a student union? As in, like, they're, I mean, I guess I understand, like, a like the Gonzaga Student Body Association. Students have unions, like organized unions?
Well, there's, and this is also a little bit under discussion, but if you're a student in a Finnish university, the only fee that you pay, and that's also something you have to pay, is membership in the student union.
Interesting.
And the student union officially has the mandate to look after students' rights in the university. So it's a little bit like labor union, not quite, but, you know, similar vein.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. So tell me, so what majors do you have there at Aalto? So finance and accounting, it sounds like, probably economics. Is that housed in the business school?
Yes, it's in business school, and it's actually one of our big growth areas right now. We have marketing, we have management. Under our department of management, there's four different disciplines. Don't ask. There's organization and management, there's international business, there's organization communications. The fourth one is entrepreneurship.
Okay, perfect. All right, we got it. Perfect. Yeah. And how many faculty? So you have 400 students in a class. So three classes, 1,200 total. Undergrad, and obviously you might have more in the master's. Maybe your master's numbers are a little lower as far as how many faculty in the building?
Well, we have, depends a little bit on how you count. Let me start from the easy end. So we have professor slots like you do. They can be assistant, associate, or full professors. We have 94 of those.
Okay. So similar to a 10-year track. So I think we have right now 45, maybe 46 total full-time faculty, but there are probably six or seven lecturers in that group. Wow, that's a good number. So you got small class sizes. Go on. Sorry to interrupt.
On top of that, we have a few lectures. We also have a lecture track. So, you know, there's actually three steps on the lecture track as well, just like with professor tracks. There's maybe 15, 20 of those. What we do use quite a bit as well is we have these professor practice positions. They can be anything from 10% to 100% contract. And especially the 10, 20% contracts, they're often people who, you know, just want to spend one day a week at school. And they can do, I mean, I demand that they have a strong connection to one of our departments. So, you know, they're not top down, you know, found on the, you know, executives, but they're rather people who want to do something, you know, concrete to the departments. And it could be teaching, it could be research, it could be societal impact or all of the above. Our professors of practice have a doctorate degree. Then we have executive in resident positions, which are very similar, except there we don't require them to be PhDs. I have to mention this, we just recruited an executive in residence a couple of weeks ago. She's the First Lady of Finland.
Awesome.
So we had presidential elections earlier this spring, and the gentleman who got elected to president, his wife will be working for us starting in September.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. How big is Helsinki? A couple million?
Well, the Helsinki city proper is only about 600,000. But then when you include the suburb, which our school is actually in a city called Espoo, which is within the metro area, very close to the downtown Helsinki, actually. So then we're about 1.5 million.
Okay. So not overwhelmingly big to where, I mean, in a country as size where, you know, the prime minister and president and the finance minister, that's fascinating. And I imagine in your role, you have some access to all those levels.
It's actually, that's one of the luxuries we have, because we, first of all, we are the leading business school of the country. So our graduates are all over the place in both public and private sectors. Secondly, Finland has very low hierarchies usually in organizations, which means that, you know, oftentimes when we recruit assistant professors from abroad, they cannot believe that they can talk to the CEO of a publicly traded company. That's not uncommon at all. So you know, in many ways, there is a luxury of being, I call our school often the big fish in a very small Finnish pond, but, you know, it describes some of this.
That's so cool. Some famous people you've met at who's the most famous person you've met? And we can, even throughout Europe, have you met like the Prince of Monte Carlo or anything like that? Or what's the?
Oh, I don't know if I can. I haven't kept score, so it's what we, you know, one thing that we do, we have a lot of events where we combine practice with our academics, and there we typically have somebody from our faculty, you know, running a panel where there would be then practitioners within, you know, his or her field. And, you know, we had one of the events last spring where we had the CEO of Nokia was kind of like the keynote of that. And, you know, we have quite easy access to CEO level people at these leading companies, which is really, really cool. And of course, our students appreciate that greatly too.
If you see the CEO again, tell him or her to bring back that Nokia 1300. It's just a simple phone, had the snake game on it, little dot matrix screen. I missed that. I've missed that for about 20 years. So
that was the time when Finland ruled the world. Then we kind of let it slip.
Yeah. It was a great phone. I was in Peace Corps in the Republic of Georgia. That was kind of my lifeline to everything. You know, it was special. So I don't think they work on the 5G structure. So
I wouldn't be surprised. You know, you don't get, you know, WhatsApp on them.
Right. So do you get to travel around the EU a lot, or you go into schools throughout
I actually travel quite a bit. I mean, I'm trying to minimize my travel, and I still travel quite a bit. Part of it has to do with accreditations. I mean, in the US, you have AACSB. In Europe, it's pretty much a norm that a leading business school would have a triple accreditation. We call it the triple crown. It includes AACSB, it includes EQUIS, which is, you know, traditionally European run, but now global as well. And then there's AMBA, which focuses on MBA programs only. But you know, I get to do those peer review trips, you know, for all of the above, and then we are parts of different networks. We were part of the network is called CEMS, CEMS. It includes there's basically one business school per country. If you're wondering, Cornell is the U.S. business school in that network.
Okay.
But within that network, there are a couple meetings per year where I pretty much have to go meet the deans of the, you know, peer schools. There's a couple other networks like that. And then we've been working to kind of, I mean, we have very strong alumni network in Finland, but we have been working to involve our international alumni as well. So we actually, about a year ago, we had an alumni meet in New York. We had one last December in London. Then, you know, interestingly enough, we have a big MBA alumni network in Seoul, South Korea. So I've been there a couple of times too to meet them and all that. So I'm trying to minimize my travel, but I still get to fly quite a bit.
That Helsinki to Seoul, that's a flight, I would imagine. Maybe you go over the top, I don't know. It's
well, yeah, actually, now that we cannot fly over our eastern neighbor, it got 2 hours longer than before. But yeah.
Wow. That's fascinating. There is a special place in heaven for you doing three accreditations. I mean, you can see how gray my hair is. I think that's from two accreditation cycles here. So
yeah.
Hopefully you can replicate some of the efforts between accreditations, but
yeah, well, they have a little bit different standards, but it's not that they wouldn't be measuring pretty much the same things. So
interesting. And
it's actually, I think it's quite rewarding to go to your peer schools to evaluate them, because they are very, very valuable bench learning experiences. And you learn a lot of little things, no matter what kind of school. There's always something that you can bring back as an idea. You can also see easily some things that you should definitely never try. So you know, they're good in many ways. Quite taxing. You know, very, very busy and work intensive 3 days that you spend at the site, but you know, they are very good learning opportunities.
And you know, I've heard that. You know, it sounds like you're on top, right? You're number one, you know. So it's a different position. I've always kind of thought about, you know, when we did our accreditation, you know, some of our what feels like are becoming our competitors, because the landscape in the US with enrollment demographics is shifting, and I'm not sure how tuned in you are with what's going on, but basically there are going to be fewer college-bound domestic students over the next decade, around 15% they're projecting. And you know, outside of the Ivy League and Stanford, most schools need tuition dollars in the US, and so it's been real competitive where you have similar schools reaching into your traditional markets, and then all of a sudden they're on an accreditation visit asking you what you do and how you differentiate. But probably don't have that problem when you're on top. Are you guys having enrollment issues in Finland? Or I mean, I guess if you got 3,500 for 400 seats, it's not a problem for you, but maybe.
No, domestically, we don't have an issue, but we're trying to work on our attractiveness globally. And that's still, I mean, it's a tough competition, because we, you know, Finland has one of the best school systems in the world. So our domestic students, they're very, very talented. And you know, the foreign students that we want to attract, they need to be, you know, at similar levels so that there
Sure.
you wouldn't have kind of, you know, two separate layers of students in the class. Of course, a lot happens during the peer-to-peer in the classroom, but at the same time, you know, we want to target the top students around the world, but there are a lot of other people who are targeting that same group, so.
Do you have any US students right now?
We have some,
Okay.
yes, most of our international students come from either you know, Central Europe or from Southeast Asia, but yeah, it's a topic that I spent quite a bit of time on to kind of figure out how we would increase our attractiveness.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, with the previously mentioned enrollment crisis, we're looking to international students in a bit of a different market position than you guys are in. And we have some recruiters, I would say, consulting firms that help, but heavily Southeast Asia, China, Vietnam. You know, I think there's a lot of potential in South America. I mean, there's a lot of that can really add to the vibrancy of campus. I mean, it's cool, you know,
Indeed,
to
we,
be a part of
you
that.
know, one thing that we do have is we have a very lively exchange program. So, we have, they're all bilateral. So there's about 250 to 270 inbound and outbound each year.
Wow.
And they really do a good, I mean, they really kind of bring their own flavor to the campus too.
Yeah, and so you guys are part of a broader university, not like Hunkin standalone. You have.
Yeah, we are, but you know, exchanges at our school. I mean, we, so I'll give you a brief, you know, education on Aalto history. So
Okay.
Aalto turned 14 years this year,
Okay.
and it's a three-way merger. So there was Helsinki University of Technology, University of Design and Arts, and then there was us. Our former name was Helsinki School of Economics,
Okay.
and the University of Technology was quite a bit bigger than the other two parts. So there is a heavy technology flavor on our campus. But when it comes to things like exchanges, for instance, our school is by far the most active on that. And we have, I think we have about 150 exchange partners around the world, different schools where, you know, we have these bilateral agreements. Yeah, I mean, they and we, interestingly enough, we collect a lot of information from the students when they come here, how they felt like feedback wise, and without hardly any exceptions, we get just, you know, very, very nice reviews from them. So, you know, we're kind of, I've told this often, I'm tired of hearing that we are a hidden gem. I would like to be just a gem.
Yeah,
So.
a bright, shiny gem up north for sure. Now, do students live on campus in dorms like they do here?
Mostly not.
Okay.
There is traditionally some, you know, dormitory type living, especially for the traditional, because the campus we're on was it used to be the campus for the University of Technology, and they had some dorms there since quite a long time ago. But now our students live pretty much anywhere within the metro area. We our building is almost brand new. We moved in 2019, and we have very easy commutes. We have a underground that goes right underneath our building, for instance. So it's easy access in terms of commuting.
Interesting, very interesting. Okay, I have some random questions for you, and I want your take as a half American, half Finn at this juncture. When you came to the States, craziest thing you thought Americans did?
Can I give you a little bit longer story?
Yeah, let's yes, please go ahead. Yeah.
My first time ever, I arrive in the at the airport in Salt Lake City, pretty late at night. And as I was going through the track team, it was all planned so that the coach would be picking me up. Well, it turned out that the coach was not picking me up. He had, you know, he had commissioned one of the team members to pick me up. This guy actually had spent his LDS mission in Finland, so he spoke some Finnish, which was a nice surprise. Yeah. But I remember from that ride from Salt Lake Airport to Provo, one thing, he, you know, anybody who's been by there, you know, you pass by this huge state prison on the way. And as we were passing, he was just saying, well, I really hope that you don't end up there. And I thought that, whoa, should I be worried? How often do you end up in jail in this country?
Right, right.
So far, I've stayed out.
Good, good. Nice work. Yeah, no, I can only imagine. And had you done some traveling before coming to the States?
I mean, this was my first time in the U.S. ever. And it was actually quite, I mean, looking back to it now, I remember first landing on JFK on Pan Am, and my first reaction looking out of the window was like, wow, there was land on this side of the Atlantic as well. So
we're here. I'm just glad you didn't land in the old LaGuardia, because it was like a third world airport until they finally redid it. But okay, favorite American food?
I must say it would be some Tex-Mex.
Okay.
There's some Mexican restaurants that I do miss.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And I guess there's really not an American, or we just kind of borrow and change a little bit. It's like when you talk to the Italians, they might say, yeah, your Italian food here is good, but it's not Italian, right? It's not nothing
yeah.
like
that. Well, I think, yeah, Mexicans also say that Mexican food is not Mexican. So,
yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Now, in Finland, I imagine it's a healthier diet of like fish and less carbs, more.
Well, yeah, we traditionally Finnish food is very plain. We're very meat and potatoes kind of a country.
Good, good. That's why you're, how tall are you? You got to be 6'4", 6'5". You're always a tall guy.
6'4".
Yeah, see, that's, you got to get the protein to go to shoot up there, yeah. That's fascinating. I hope I don't end up in prison of all places. Looking back at your time at Gonzaga, what did you value most, do you think? And it could be the MBA years or your professor years.
No, I think it common to both years. I enjoyed the family atmosphere at the Jepson Center. I mean, I think I felt like there was a constant threat of being adopted by your students, really. And
that's for sure.
And it's good and bad. I always kind of wanted to keep the professional distance at some level. But, you know, especially looking back, it was really nice. You felt like it was one big family.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I agree with, it's healthy to keep a professional distance and not, you know, so it's a hard line to walk, but it certainly is a special place. Now, you mentioned you were from the coast. What did your parents do when you were growing up? I'm assuming maybe something in fishing, but maybe I don't know. I don't want to.
We were not quite on the beach. My mom was a nurse, and my dad was actually mostly, you know, kind of super. He was in building supervision. He actually had his own business before he retired, doing kind of building maintenance type of stuff. But yeah, he was in the construction side of things.
Fantastic. It was probably about 6 or 7 years, but I read a book on spies, and how they would get out of Moscow was usually through Finland. And there's a great British spy story. I think he's still hiding. He was KGB, but he's still hiding out. I wish I could remember his name. I digress. So spring, We're getting close to graduation. What advice do you have to students? And I won't even limit it to Zags, but it could be, but to students that are graduating and they're about to embark on a career and hopefully have some impact in a positive way.
No, I do have one piece of advice that I often shared with my advisees at Gonzaga as well. And you might not like hearing this, but that's the point of time when the students start taking a lot of stress about their career. I quite often, when I said this, I see the dark cloud going off their, top of their head. I said, there's no hurry. Let the good opportunities come to you. Just be ready when the door opens, or if it doesn't come now, I often tell my students even now that about my 3 gap years, things will come to you. Just be ready when they do. So.
That is so true. And sometimes if you get in a hurry, you can scuttle into the wrong place.
Yeah, and I mean, students take a lot of stress, especially if they have kind of gone just through these tracks and, high school, quickly to good college, quickly to right courses, right programs. And then, if the next click doesn't happen right away, it's a serious thing, maybe the first in their lives. But, good things happen to good people, and I'm firm believer of that.
That's so true. Good things happen to good people, 100%. Well, I appreciate your time.
This was a lot of fun. Thanks a lot, Andrew.
Cheers, Timo. Good to see you.
Thank you for listening to the G Suite podcast. This episode was produced and hosted by Andrew Brasich and edited by Jack Talbot. To find more G Suite and many other podcasts on the Gonzaga Podcast Network, remember to check out gonzaga.edu/podcasts. Thanks again.